We were listening to the one of your episodes on the car right here. It was the Valentine one.
Oh!
That was the funniest episode. You guys asked somebody, you guys are like, what does love mean to you? And he's like, you know, when you wake up and she's sick and you make her soup. Yeah, so that was
that was fun. Zach. That was Zach.
Hey, hey, shout out to Zach.
Yeah, that was a funny episode. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
Welcome to this week's edition of Pal Talk Real Talk. We are your hosts, Henny and Amalie.
Hi, Henny.
Hi, Amalie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. Nothing much. You know, lately I've just been thinking a lot because I have a little bit of a dilemma going on with me, at least right now. And it has a lot to do with Diddy.
Oh.
So I thought this would be a great introduction to get into the Can I Talk to You for a Minute segment.
Can I talk to you for a minute?
Because we ain't did that in a while, so.
Can I talk to you for a minute?
Let me talk to y'all for a minute.
All right, go ahead.
First of all, Diddy, whose number I do have. I just want to put it out there. I have Diddy's number. I got it from the community number. He texts me all the time. It's kind of like annoying at this point because I respond back. And then I get nothing back. I'm like, did they just...
What is... what? Okay, so how did he get... How did you get...
Did he put his number out on Instagram? And okay. I was the first person, at least I think, because I saw it on like 2 seconds later. And I was like, let me add this guy's number. And I add it and I say, hi, Diddy. I'm looking for an opportunity to get a job on TV. And then he sends me nothing. And then it was like a message. And he only accepts certain people from what I guess. What celebrities do this all the time. So they have... They give out their numbers, but it's not really their numbers. It's a cell phone that they have that has... it's owned by this app called Community. And they just put it out and they're able to talk to their fans.
For what
reason? So I figured this would have been a perfect opportunity for me to get a job with Diddy, but he never responded back to me. So now Diddy's on my enemy list.
Oh.
I'm a little upset with
you. Know
Diddy.
All of his enemies get shot up.
Oh my God.
Just saying.
Just kidding, Diddy. I'm your friend. I've done nothing to you. We're good friends. Recently I found out that he's bringing back Making the Band, and I'm kind of pissed because literally every band that Diddy has ever come up with has broken up because of Diddy. And I've been watching clips on YouTube of Danny DeCane and how he just like kicked out D Woods and Aubrey.
Yeah, why?
He just was like, oh, you're no longer a good singer. And he kicked them out. And then that was that. And then Dee Woods tried to say something. She just tried to insert herself into why Danny DeCane is meant to be a 5 group instead of a 4 group. And then he's like, you can go too. And she was like, really? Really?
Really, nigga?
He's like, yeah, you can go. And then she obviously said, thanks for the opportunity, all that stuff. And deuces. And
so she really left?
She really left. And you don't see her.
Is that why there's beef
anymore?
Between... but didn't Dee Woods come back with him and Diddy Dirty Money?
No.
That's not
she
Dee
left.
Woods?
When she was gone, she was gone. That was Dawn.
Dawn.
Yeah, because Dawn was in it. And then they broke up. And yesterday, I was thinking about Dream. Dream broke up because of Diddy. 112 broke up. Day 26 broke up. Like, why are you doing Making the Band if they're gonna break up inevitably because of your choices?
I have a question. What band was it, the one that had the Dream, the Liquid Dream?
I don't remember.
They were a Diddy band too.
My favorite Making the Band scene is the one where he made them go walk literally 3 hours across the Brooklyn Bridge for a cheesecake.
For Cambodian
because he
breast
wanted,
milk?
No, for a cheesecake because he wanted a strawberry cheesecake from this specific restaurant. And it was cold. It was like 20 degrees outside and they walk. No money in the world is worth a walk. I'm sorry. No money in the world is worth a walk. So basically, Diddy just kind of he kind of just made me mad with that whole situation because we're in the age of social media too. So people can just put out their music all of a sudden, and you don't, and then that's how they can get their views. So that's how they can get popular. Whereas 15, 10 years ago, you couldn't do that. You really were looking for an opportunity, and you were selling out your mixtapes and all that stuff online. On MySpace, just trying to get an opportunity.
That's true.
But
so where is it going to play?
And MTV. It's back on MTV.
Oh, wow.
But Diddy, it's just, I know for a fact, whatever band he picks, give it 6 months.
Do
they'll
you
break
think,
up.
I was going to say, do you think that Diddy's like probably jealous that the band?
He's problematic.
Yeah. I think he's jealous of the band and how much success they're getting. And that's why he's like, you know what?
I think he's bored. And then he finds he nitpicks every little thing. Like Danny DeCane was doing so well their first album. And then all of a sudden he's like, you got to go. Like just telling two of the members of Danny DeCane deuces. And,
that makes
and then
sense.
All of a sudden Danny DeCane just went down and now there are 3 members, 4 members, but it's still not the same because it's not the OG Danny DeCane. And you know, they all sing their same thing. Just like day 26, he tried to kick out certain people and stuff. It's just a whole problematic situation.
He has enough
and
money.
And they always have great first albums. I'm not going to deny his art. He's a really good, talented producer. He has Brian Cox and all that just making like really banging albums. But then it's just like right after, he's just like, I don't give a shit about you anymore. You know that Toy Story part where he's like, I don't want to play with you anymore. That's Diddy to all of his bands. He tells, he's like, I don't want to play with you anymore. I've had my fun. You gotta go.
That's not even fair. He already
Diddy one night stands his bands. He hits him with the deuces.
Wait, you know, that's actually a good way to put it.
Diddy one night stands his bands.
I like that.
I'm just pointing out there, he has always one night stands. He'll maybe have like after a 4 month relationship and be like, I don't want to play with you anymore.
I mean, now he's like 50. He's 50 and what? Never been married?
Yeah, I mean, his
commitment is looks like a big problem.
Commitment is a problem with Diddy. So, I mean, I just want to, I'm excited to see that making the band, but I'm also like, how long until you get rid of him and dispose him like a recycle?
After the first album? If you could make a band, though, like, what would your band name would be?
I haven't thought about that. I haven't thought about that. Obviously, I would be lead. Because I just feel like I'd...
No, honey, you're the producer.
Oh, okay.
You're the producer.
Well, I have to see the band. I have to get the vibe of the band. I can't just pick out a name.
Is it going
to
be alternative R&B?
Of course. No, not alternative R&B. Pure R&B. We're talking...
That's what I'm talking
90s,
about.
2000s R&B. Taking a lot of hits from Jodeci. A lot of Genuine. I would have loved to have Devontae Swing as my producer.
That's just good how choice. Good choice.
Like, I know my music. So
good choice.
That's pretty much... That's pretty much it. I mean, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, and that's our edition of... Can I talk to you for a minute?
Can I talk to you for a minute?
And with that, that brings us to our topic of the episode. Amelia, what's the episode topic called?
All right. So today we have two special guests with us. Do you guys want to introduce yourselves before I tell the topic?
My name is Abdulbari Ali.
And mine is Dino Ibrahim.
Hi, guys.
Hey, guys.
So as I was talking to Abdulbari and I was talking to Dino, the subject that came up was faith. As young people, we tend to overlook faith in our lives and never realize the importance of having a spiritual journey to discovering it. So as I was talking to them, I felt like I felt like a connection between both of them and us in the conversation. And I was like, dang, if we can have that like off topic, why not have it on topic?
Ooh, okay.
So I think the first question, as I was talking to you guys, the first thing that came up was like your upbringing. So you both grew up in the same religion, but your upbringing to that religion is different. Can you tell us a little bit more about that journey?
I mean, I could start myself, you know, but...
What's your name again?
Dino.
Okay, you know, Dino, go ahead.
I'm from Otana. It's a little town.
Shout out.
But so anyways, my upbringing, my parents are not very religious. Like, growing up, it's still very much like cultured, Somali culture. You know, it was harsh, like, growing up as a kid. For me, religion was a way, like, I found to cope with my traumas as a kid growing up. And, like, I feel like a lot of Somalis could relate to it because we all have the same parents, kind of basically, because they have the same foundation to teach, like, to the way they parent. So for me, like, not having, like, religious parents, like, affected my faith a lot.
How so?
Because I was being raised in an environment where, you know, I'm constantly learning new things. So, learning English, learning the culture, just school, about just how a parent should raise their kids, see my white friends, how they have a relationship with their parents, you know, parents supporting them, like, not having my parents around in school, the environment, or, like, when they would come and be just for conferences, you know. It's not like a parent, it's not the same relationship that I had with my parents, you know. And I feel like a lot of Somali kids could relate to that. But faith is like was always missing because I didn't have religious parents. I went to Duxie like everybody else did. But it was like...
Can you tell what Duxie is for
Duxie
those
is like a school, you know, basically.
Kind of like Sunday school.
Kind of like Sunday school, yep. Where you learn the religion, you know, where they teach you to memorize Quran. They teach you the basics of your faith. But for me, my parents like didn't like stress the importance of deen. You know, like I would...
Can you tell us what deen is?
Deen is faith. Deen is religion, basically. Deen means religion. So that was not a strong foundation in my household. And I had to like find it on my own. And after, I found out like once I got older and I did a bunch of research, you know, just looking for like ways to like cope with, you know, just growing up in America.
Okay, thank you. And then Abdulbari, how was your upbringing?
So yeah, I also grew up in Otana, very small town. The family that I grew up with are like most of us, like the religion was basically our culture, you know, like it was something that was kind of installed in us at a very young age. My dad was like a very religious man. He was a sheikh. His dad was a sheikh. His dad's dad was a sheikh. His brothers, my uncles are sheikhs, you know. So that was kind of the household that I grew up in. And yeah, the faith was just something that was just like part of our lives, you know. we used to, you know, go to school during the weekday, and then Saturday and Sunday we wake up early, go to Duxie or Sunday school. And yeah, it was just something that was normal. It was like, you know, it wasn't something that was like I'd never stressed over it or something like that. It was just part of my life, you know. And my dad was also a ma'alan, like he was the teacher of the Sunday school, you could say. So you had, that was probably like.
He's a preacher's kid. A preacher's
kid. Yeah. So like, you know, yeah, that's the way that I grew up, I guess. So
can you tell us a positive thing from your upbringing that affected your journey into faith?
For mine, I guess, like, there was a lot of, like, reinforcement with the dean. Like, it was always, that was something that was mentioned, you know, like, if some, like, even my parents would, basically, they would lecture me as if I was doing the worst things, you know what I mean? I think we could all relate to that, being from, like, a Somali household, you know? Like, whenever I'm going out, my dad is always telling me, hey, don't do this, don't do that. Remember, you have to do the right thing and stuff like that. So that just kind of, they would always just reinforce me. And I think that was a positive. A lot of people could look at it as a negative, but once I was out, you know, in the real world by myself, that was just something that came naturally to me. So I think I took that as a positive.
And then, Dino, what about you?
I mean, something positive would be just having that strict parents, you know, because when you do have strict parents, you tend to be scared of them. You would do things out of fear, you know. So I was scared to do a lot of things, like, you know, because I knew if I did those things, my parents would, like, discipline me, you know. Like, you know, my grandpa was very strict. And, like,
how did them being strict, like, what did it do? Did it teach you discipline as you got older?
So I didn't try, like, to, like, do things, you know, like, where other kids were, like, they could, like,
experiment.
Yeah, they could experiment, yeah. So I was scared. And I did those things once I got older. But when I was younger, I was just too scared to even try to do them, you know? Mm-hmm. So that saved me, like, in the long run, because once I did find faith, like, they did some things right where, you know, like, I was fearing to do those things, but, you know, I found it through love, you know, like, I found it my own way by learning the dean, like, what the dean says on that, and, like, even though they didn't teach me the right way,
yeah,
I still came to the same conclusion as they wanted me, you know, they wanted me to be a good kid at the end of the day, and they were doing it, you know, out of love, but, you know, I didn't see that as a kid, you know, but once I got older, I understood.
You're like, yeah.
Yeah, I understood, like, yo, you know, like, maybe that was a good thing, you know, I don't like, regret it, you know.
I think it's so it kept your innocence in a way, so you were still able to be, like, a child.
Yeah, like, I was still, like, a child, yeah, basically. But that's also, like, a bad end, because you, like, you don't grow fast enough, you know, because you want to be, like...
So that would be my next question, then. What is, like, one negative thing that your upbringing affected you through your journey of faith?
Oh, just, like, the harsh environment. Like, everything would be so harsh, and it would be, like, urgency, kind of, you know, where, like, they want you... It's just commands that you have to, like, follow commands. Do this, do that, do this, do that. If you don't, you're this, that, you know? And just as a kid, you don't understand that. You know, you don't understand why is... Because you want to do kid stuff. You want to, you know, like, kids
freedom,
are just...
Freedom, yeah.
Yeah, they want to just, like, experiment things. They want to just, you know? And, like, there was never, like, sit downs like, yo, you don't do this because this is the reason why you don't do it. Just expect you, hey, don't do this. And they're like, why don't you do it? They never explain why they don't do it, you know? Like, you have to do this, but you don't know why you have to do it, you know? And as a kid, it's like, why is that? You question a lot of things, you know? And as you get older, those questions build up, you know, and it makes you frustrated. And some kids rebel, mm-hmm. you know, and me, I was too scared to rebel. But once I got older, like a certain age, you know, I started to rebel. You know, I started to rebel, not because I wanted to, but because, like, I was forced to rebel, kind of, you know, because, like, there's no other way for me to, like, cope with it.
Okay.
You know, it was building up, and it was confusing. And I was like, you know, I don't care, I'm going to do it anyways, you know.
Oh.
But once I did find faith, you know, I went back to, you know, like, I fixed my relationship with my parents, and basically everything worked out once I found faith again, you know. Mm-hmm. But I had to, like, find, it wasn't an easy journey to find faith, you know, like, so that was my experience.
And then, Jabari, what is yours? What is, like, one negative aspect of your upbringing that you think that affected?
So, kind of agreeing with Dino, like, I feel like when we grow up, there's certain things that they tell us that we shouldn't do, and we kind of see it as, like, taboo, you know, and we just don't really know why. And personally, like, coming from a mixed background, like, my mom's Ethiopian, my dad's Somali, so I grew up not speaking Somali. But once I moved to Otana, like, the language that we spoke in our house was Amharic. It was, like, an Ethiopian language, so we didn't speak Somali, so I didn't know Somali. So I'm going to Duxie, I'm going to the masjid, and they're speaking Somali, and everything that I'm learning is, like, they're telling me don't do this, and sometimes they explain it, but everything's in Somali, you know. So I grew up not really understanding, like, why we shouldn't do certain things. I just knew, like, that's the bad thing, you know, like, don't do it. So I guess a negative would just be like the language barrier, you know, that really kind of affected or kind of hindered my growth in the religion aspect, you could say.
You talk a lot about your struggles and kind of what your parents have instilled into you as a kid. So I guess what I want to know is, moving forward, when you have children and you're adapting into a parenting lifestyle, what would you do things differently? How would you do things differently if you plan on doing things differently?
Okay. Personally, I feel like, I don't know, you know, I have a lot of siblings, and like my parents, they all told us the same thing. And sometimes what your parent tells you, like, you take more from it than your siblings do, you know? But personally for me, I would probably have like similar teaching ways, but just communication, you know, like communicate a lot with my future kids and kind of make them more comfortable to be open with me, you know, and just have those open conversations. So that's something that I would definitely add on to what I would teach my kids or pass on to my kids, you know, just have them more comfortable, I guess.
I would do like a lot of things different because like...
Give us like one example you would just do differently.
Like the culture and whenever you mix culture and religion, you always get a bunch of complications, right? Because if your faith says one thing and your culture, you know, they do another thing. And so for our parents, I feel like a lot of the stuff they do and the way they raise us was from their culture. That's how they were raised, you know. That's how their parents raised them. So they feel like, since, you know, I came out okay, I was fine. You know, if I raise my kids like this, you know, they should be fine too, you know. But they were raised in a different environment, you know. For me, if I was to raise my kids in this environment, I would like change the communication, you know, aspects, because I could understand, you know, I understand English, obviously, so I'll be able to communicate with my kids in English or Somali, or, you know, like my language, because I feel like it's important too to hold on to your language and your culture, but you don't have to follow everything your culture says. Mm. You know, like, it's okay to, like, you know, integrate, like, you know, you're very much American, you know, my kids are going to be American. If they're born here, they're going to be American more than they are Somali. You know,
That's true. Never
been to Somali. I left when I was 2 years old. I've never been there. So how can I expect them to be something that I'm not myself, you know? So it's like being American, there's nothing wrong with being American, you know?
So but, you would understand your kids in the sense like how they're growing up versus like your parents. Not,
yeah, like I would know the environment they're in. I know what, you know, like the things that, you know, the environment persuades them to do, you know, things that I've done myself. And I would want my kids to go that route as well, you know? So I would like be more aware of them and like their feelings, you know, like not maybe like I would watch my words carefully when I'm talking to them, because a kid, you know, they're innocent still, and anything you say, whether you mean it or not, could affect them, you know. So if you talk to them in a negative way, they will, you know, shut you out, you know, they will not come to you, they will not be comfortable talking to you about certain things because they're scared of you. But if you're like their friend and like you try to be like try to understand them, you know, talk to them, you know, why you're doing certain things and why like it's bad for you, like teach them, you know, like just be like more caring, you know, because love always more hate, you know, because if you teach a kid something through hate or out of fear, you know, they're gonna do it. But it's like once you teach them through love, they're gonna, you know, be willing to do it on their own, you know, they're gonna be good kids regardless.
Question. Can okay. I just throw it
yeah,
out there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So it's funny like how like growing up we always think like there's a huge cultural gap or like age difference between our parents and us, you know, and a lot of us feel like our parents are like too strict or like they're too religious and they kind of like enforce that on us in some aspects at least. But it's like growing up now, it's funny to think like now that I've learned more about my parents and like other Somali parents, it's like funny to think like how similar they were to how we are now. Because growing up, they weren't really that religious. Because I've seen a video of like on Instagram where there's like, I think it was like in the 90s, early
90s. I saw that. It's a video of some party.
Yeah, like a bunch of Somali people and like they're probably early 20s, mid 20s, and they're just partying. So I feel like they grew up similar to the way that we grew up. But then once they hit a certain age, they just became like these whole different people, you know? Have you guys ever thought about that? Isn't that kind of weird?
No, I never really thought about that.
I mean, personally, like, that's why I'm able to understand where they're coming from, because I actually did research, because they wouldn't tell me anything. So it is right. That is right that our parents, like, the reason why they, like, teach us so harshly is because, you know, once the Civil War broke out back home, and like he said, we were not religious at first. We were very much, like, secularized. Like, so they were just, like, our parents used to go, like, intermingle, you know, and they used to just be chilling.
Yeah.
And, you know, just like having an American lifestyle, basically.
Yeah.
But once the blood shit like broke out and everybody was like killing each other and like, you know, it was like getting dangerous, you know, religion was something they could like fall back onto because they were scared, you know? So they did it like urgently because it's like their life was like every day, any day they could die now, you know? So they became more religious at a faster rate because they were all scared to die, you know? So once they did come to America, they didn't have to be scared, you know? They didn't have to,
That fear wasn't there.
That fear was not there. So if the religion was not there, it was out of fear, right?
Yeah.
And the environment, they would see like they would hear the Adhan 5 times a day, the call to prayer. You know, they would hear it 5 times a day. They would see people that are like very much Muslim. You know, like what there was like respect. You know, like in the culture where you have to the elders respect the you know the younger people respect the younger the older people. They could always correct you. You know, because they were all like you know how Somalia was like divided into like tribes and stuff.
Yeah.
So every tribe like cared about each other, you know. So that's your uncle, that's your aunt, you know. So if you do something wrong, they would be corrected, right? So it was like at the end of the day, they're like even if it's harsh, they were okay with it because they were still Muslim. But in this environment, like you have nobody to correct you as a kid. Like nobody's gonna correct your kid for you outside. You know, they're learning different things, right? And for them, they're not out there to see what their kids are going through. They still expect their kids to be like them, you know, because you know they had that Muslim environment. You know, we don't have that Muslim environment. We have a very much like environment where it's like not very religious.
Intermingled.
Yeah, not even like not very religious, you know. Very away from religion. Like, you know, they just kinda do whatever you want, everything's fine, you know, freedom. And like as a kid, you're seeing these things, but when you come home, it's very different, you know. Our parents are like listen to like BBC, so they constantly like hearing back home, you know, they're acting like as if they're still in Somalia.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So they have different things to worry about.
Yeah, like they don't go outside. Like they're not, you know, they're not like, they're just home. Dad's usually working and the mom has to take care of the kids, right? So the mom's like seeing these kids and like back home, like there was never communication. You just expected to do these things, you know, because they're surviving. They're just surviving, right?
Yeah.
But for us, it's like, oh, we have TV, we have this, we have that. And like as a mother, like you have to cook for your kids, you know? So like you're expected to do those things still. Because of our culture.
Yeah.
And for a kid, when you come to the household, you still want communication. You still want like, but mom is busy. Mom is doing this too much. You know.
So there's no time to talk.
Yeah,
basically.
Time, you know, like talk and build, right? But when you do something wrong, you know, you always like getting yelled at. You're always doing stop this, stop that. And you don't know why, you know, because there is no communication.
Oh.
You know? So a lot of kids, like, they feel frustrated and they, like, you know, they get mad.
So basically they go from, like, no communication to the only thing they're communicating about is being disciplined.
Yeah, like,
there's no relationship there.
The only time you're communicating is when you're being told what to do. You know, do this, do that. If you don't do it, oh, you know, they see mom calls dad and dad comes from work. And then, like, he doesn't ask, like, what's wrong or not. He just beats you up because he didn't do it, you know?
That's true.
Mm-hmm. And then, like...
But if you could give one advice to, I think, like, parents out there, what would you be advice in a way that... they have an open dialogue with their kid for both of you guys. So
like advice to our parents?
No, just like to not to your parents, to any parent that wants to probably like communicate with their kids. Because some parent could be listening and be like, dang, the only time I do talk to my kids is when I'm disciplining them rather than asking them how they are as a person. Mm-hmm. So from your upbringing and your background, what advice would you give to a parent to have an open dialogue with their kid?
I would say always listen, you know, always give your kid the benefit of the doubt, you know, because kids make the mistakes. Kids are kids, you know. But it's not. You shouldn't punish your kids for doing something that they don't know is right or wrong. You know, they're just doing this because they're a kid. They just do it. You know, so you have to like, if something is wrong, tell them why it's wrong and like try to get them to understand why it's wrong and like instead of like just disciplining them and just like not giving them like that comfort. You know.
Yes.
Because they're still gonna do it again. You know, if they're still gonna do it again, if you don't tell them like why it's wrong, they're still gonna do it again. But if you like just try to understand them and listen. You're gonna get a higher chance that those kids are gonna be like coming to you for help if they need something.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm. Jabari?
I mean, I think like the normal thing to say would be like just be more open, communicate more, you know. But there's this one video of this one girl talking about like how all these kids are overdosing and like drinking and going crazy and stuff like that. And she was crying and basically, have you guys seen that video?
Yeah, I think so.
And she was talking about like how parents don't really understand their kids. And I think it starts off at an early age. Like as a parent, you have to understand that these kids are not doing these things because they want to, you know, and maybe they're doing it to like escape the reality that they're in, you know, like people don't go out and like take 10 bars, you know, for the fun of it. They do it because they're trying to escape whatever reality that they're in. So I think you have to, you know, just communicate more with your kid and understand where they're coming from, you know, because if you are still having this mindset that like, oh, this is taboo, and if you do this, I'm gonna disown you, that's how the kid's gonna feel. Mm-hmm. So when the kid goes and does that thing that you told him is taboo, he's gonna be like, there's no way I could go tell my mom or dad. He's gonna be like, if I do that, then I'm gonna be disowned, you know? So, you know, and I brought up that thing about like our parents being a lot similar to us, because it's weird because like they grew up similar to us, and okay, like not identical to us, but like they grew up maybe
partying, going out,
partying and stuff like that, you know. Like my parents, I thought they're like, they are very religious. I seen pictures of my mom not, like now wearing a jilbab, you know, she was wearing jeans, like loose jeans, and
like,
hair,
what?
Yeah, hair showing and stuff, you know. And I was just like, who is this person, you know? And I, the only way I seen that was when I went back home and I seen the photo album, you know what I mean? So it's weird to think that the people that grew up like this became parents, and then they're having like these different views, you know? So I feel like we're telling each other like we have to be more open once we become parents. But once we do become parents, who's to say that we don't start acting like they are right now, you know?
Dang.
So, I mean, yeah, just be more open. You have to really be understanding of your kid, you know? Like nobody, like I said, nobody takes these substances and does these crazy stuff, because maybe at first you're curious and it's fun. But then when you continuously do it and you're overdosing, you know, and then you... there was a parent that her kid died of overdosing, and she was neglecting the fact that that's how he died. She was just basically saying like something else happened to my kid, and my kid was going through it or something, you know? So if that's the point that we're at right now, I guess we just all have to do better, like understanding the situation in our kids, you know?
I mean, I can speak for my community. I can't speak for other people's community, you know? Because every community is different, right? But like there's, right now we're already like at the stage, right, where we see like all like brothers and sisters killing each other, like in like bad environments, you know? It's like, we have to like open up like the dialogue, you know, like, for the kids to be comfortable to like ask for help, you know? Because it's like our culture doesn't help it. It's like we add on to the thing, you know?
I was going to say, speaking of culture, how do you think your culture views faith?
Islam was always sent down to correct like certain things, right?
Culture, yeah. Right?
So if you're holding on to your culture still, even though if it's going against your deen, your religion, then that's the ego problem, you know? That's something that you need to get rid of. And our culture needs to get rid of the stuff that go against our faith, you know? And that's the problem.
Do you think that confuses like kids growing up in households?
Yeah, because they don't know it, you know? Like me, for example, like I was always told to pray, right, when I was younger. But I would never see my parents praying. You know, I would never see them like praying. They would tell me to pray, and I would just like go to the bathroom, rush, you know, I would just say I prayed. Right. Or I would like, but they would never tell me like, why do you pray? And I was like, what are you gaining from praying? Like once I got older and I started like doing my own research and I learned like the value of prayer and what prayer is and like who God is and, you know, all these stories I'm talking about because of the stories of the prophets. And once I understood like the background of everything, I did that stuff on my own. I started like the deen on my own, and I was like, yo, this is actually something very valuable, you know? And I was doing it voluntarily, right? Because it was through love, right? The prophets and them, when he was teaching, it was always through love. It was always merciful, you know? It was like mercy upon mankind, right? So he was always teaching showing the religion through mercy. They didn't get beat up, you know? He didn't beat the companions up.
So culture would be like beating your kids up, but then like faith is like, or religion is like, teach it through mercy.
Yeah, it's through mercy. It's through example, being a good example, you know? And we do it by, our culture is, we do it urgently, you know? And like, if we don't get this, if you don't do this, this and that, then your kid is bad. You know?
Oh.
But it's like,
faith is like, take your time.
Yeah, faith is something you have to develop. It's not something easy. It's like, it's choice. Why everybody has a choice to be good or bad, you know? Like, you could be knowledgeable about everything, but like, if you don't do it, at the end of the day, you're still the same, you know? Because it doesn't matter what you know, it's about what you do. I know a lot of people, for example, that did have religious parents, and that did like, know a lot of Quran. But they're not religious. Like, why is that? You know, like, it's not always about what you know. Why? It's about, you have to implement what you know.
And that's true. And then, Adwar, what do you think?
So I think Somalis, compared to like other cultures or ethnic groups, they do very well with the religion. Like, they're more of the religious ones, you know, like in Quran competitions around the world. they do very well. I think recently, like in the past year or so, they had like a world competition and the winner was a Somali boy. Mm-hmm. So they do very well in that. But I think in our community, like personally speaking, like with all the issues that the younger generation is going through, I think you just need more people that can relate to them in the masjids, you know, because if you go to our masjid, it's the same people that have been leading the masjid for like the past 2-3 decades, you know. So if you have a kid that's going through these issues and he goes to the masjid and it's like this 40, 50, 60, 70 year old man that, you know, doesn't really understand English, let alone the issues that they're going through, that kid is not going to even want to come to the masjid, you know, and kind of seek help. So, I mean, as Somalis, like in the bigger aspect of it, we do very well. But within my own community, I think we just have to do better, like just getting like sheikhs or people that know what they're talking about that can relate to the kids. Because there would be times like during Friday prayer, like during khutbah, our imam, like he does his normal thing and, you know, he's speaking Somali and he just, you know, he's doing great and all, but I personally can't really, I understand it, but I don't really speak Somali, you know, so I can't really get as much as I should be getting from the lecture, you know. But then like the one or two times where there's a sheikh from the cities and he speaks English, like it really resonates with me, you know, like I really take a lot more from that. And that's coming from a person that grew up in a religious household and is somewhat, you know, close to the deen, you know. So what's somebody that's not close to the deen going to take away from a 60-year-old man, you know, preaching about something and somebody that they don't really care for, you know? So, yeah.
Or they would like talk about things, when, even like if they're speaking Somali or when the Friday prayers, when there's like, some people only like go to Friday prayer like once in a blue moon, right?
Yeah.
So if that time, like if they don't talk, if you, like you said, if you have an English speaker, you already have a disadvantage, you know, because you might not even understand Somali. But if once the ones that do understand Somali, they'll talk about like topics that are like not important, like to you, you know? Like they'll talk about how to slaughter a goat or like how to like, like the rituals, like they'll talk about like off topic things that are like will not like affect your faith, you know? Like it's not gonna, me knowing how to slaughter a goat is not gonna help me like.
Or they'll just tell a hadith, but they won't really
go into it
or kind of give examples why like that hadith matters to us today, you know?
Yeah, like how you have to like.
So they can't relate to the generation that's happening. Yeah, like, what the generation is.
The imam, because the imam is like responsible for that community, right? So the imam, like whatever, like issues that he sees happen in the community, he has to talk about those issues to like affect that community, you know? You cannot just like follow a book, like you just read this book today, tomorrow read this topic, tomorrow read that topic, and just like go through like a list, right?
Yeah.
Because those things might not be affecting your community, you know? So it's like, I feel like they should be more aware of their communities, you know, and like talk about topics that do affect their communities, because every community is different.
Yeah.
I think we need like some sort of election where we like get ready these imams every 5 years or something.
Recycle.
Like we need something new every 5-10 years, because that imam is going to start getting tired and he's going to literally be just saying the same thing and it's going to just kind of go with the motion, you know?
So that's what faith is looking like in your community. Have an election. Get the imams out.
It's time for an election.
Listen, yeah.
Refresh your eyes.
But like in Owatonna, like shout out to the people in Owatonna. Like for the past few years, like Dino and a couple of other guys, like they put together this group to kind of help the kids and, you know, kind of help them like stray away from the drugs and stuff like that. Mm. And then this past like few months, like the girls in Owatonna.
The girls, the sisterhood, yeah.
The sisterhood, they're doing that. So shout out to them, you know. So like even if it doesn't do much for the older kids, you know, those little kids is going to do a lot for them. It just gives them a place to come to and just chill. Like even if you're not learning about the deen, it's just a place that you feel comfortable, you know, and you're not doing those bad things. So
I never think twice about me as a person, as like a person that's getting older. I never think twice about the kids that are younger than me, to be honest. I don't think about them as much. And now I'm just like seeing like the sisterhood thing. I was like, oh, that's really nice, that the fact that they're thinking about younger kids. Yeah. So that could be like one thing for a community, for whatever your community that you are in.
What's really good that I'm seeing around these days is in regards to the whole like overdosing and stuff, we are seeing open dialogue about this. It's no longer being brushed under the rug. But I really feel like in that term, we should be analyzing why are these kids doing the bars and the Zans and all the whatever they're called. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it has to do with, at first it's curiosity, but second, it is underlining mental health issues. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that we talk enough about mental health within our community, because I'm not going to say it's super taboo, but I'm going to say that it is brushed under the rug. A lot of the times they'd be like, oh no, you need Quran Sad because you have demons in you or something mm-hmm. like that. But it's like, no, as parents, I feel like parents need to be able to talk to their kids and be able to support their kids with their depression and anxiety and other mental health issues that mm-hmm. they might have, because that dialogue that they can have with their kids could be the line that doesn't get them to overdose and go into the whole drugs and alcohol thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think also don't be afraid of your own kid. Yeah. It's like your own child.
But I think children are afraid, at least children are afraid. In my experience, I struggled a lot with my mental health, and mm-hmm. I knew, like, when I first got diagnosed and stuff, I was really, really afraid to tell my mom, because I was like, I don't know how my parents are going to react. They don't really talk about this enough. I know when they talked about depression, they just said, oh, it's just, it's all stress. In their head. It's stress. Yeah. But, and it, for me, it was like, I don't know how to get this to get them to support me, because mm-hmm. I don't know if they will be able to support me. And so I felt like a lot of the things that I was doing, because I was so afraid to talk to them, was just to kind of go into a whole rebellious form, because I felt like that was my form of coping and my way of coping and my way of just not accepting the reality that was in front of me.
Yeah.
And once I did have that dialogue with my parents, I was actually really surprised that, yeah, it was definitely a step forward. Like, it wasn't easy. They didn't believe me for a while, mm-hmm. but when they saw the whole patterns and everything going on and on and on, they were just like, yeah.
Was that your call for attention? To let them know, like, something was up, like,
A lot of the times it was that, and it's just me just feeling really depressed and going through a lot of struggles within myself that mm-hmm. I felt like I don't really care if I have, if there's a decision, and I hate to say it, but things had gotten so bad for me that it was just like life or death. I don't mm-hmm. care. And so it was, for me, it was just my way of saying, like, I don't know how to handle this. So this is how I'm going to turn into, this is where I'm going to go into this aspect of it.
Yeah. What
because
pattern?
I just couldn't accept it.
What patterns?
I could have a lot related to that, because I remember I was like,
never mind, go ahead.
I remember I was like doing certain things just to see if I would get their attention, you know, because uh-huh. they would like constantly say some stuff, you know, and then I'd be like, okay, I'm gonna really, like, they could be totally wrong about what I'm doing, right? They mm-hmm. just assume shit from like what they hear, right? Or because reputation is very important.
But
then, like, they would say stuff about me that, like, it's not true, mm-hmm. and I'd be like, okay, let me see if I do start doing them, if you're gonna like notice a difference, you know. So then I would just do stuff just to see, like, if they would pick up on, like, you know, like, the difference, you know.
But then
once they start, like, not like noticing, I already was hooked on. I was already, like, you know, like, in that environment. I put myself in that situation, and, like, I found it hard to come out of that, you know, like, that situation. But eventually I did, you know, alhamdulillah, eventually I did come out of those environments. Mm-hmm. But at first I did it because just to, like, not to rebel, but just to, like, see if they actually cared, because I mean, it almost makes you feel like they don't care, you know, at a certain point, because mm-hmm. it's like, what you say doesn't matter. You have no voice, you know, you have no, like, your opinion doesn't matter. And it's always like, okay, these people, do they actually care?
Right? Yeah.
You would ask these questions, because every kid is going to ask these questions, you know, like, you want your parents to be your parents, you know?
Yeah.
And if you don't feel that way, then you start doubting them, you know, and then you start doing certain things, you know, out of ignorance or just out of, because rebellion or whatever you call it. But, you know, I did certain things, you know, just to, like, cope with what I was going through. And I did certain things just to see if they would notice what I'm doing and what I'm going through. And I found out that they're not noticing, you know, the difference. I just, you know, they cared more about, like, my opinion and my reputation more than, like, my feelings, you know. Wow. Like, so, and I feel like a lot of parents do that, you know.
By the time that parents do pay attention, it's kind of already too late.
It's already too late, yeah. The kids already lost hope. The kids already, they're in that environment because, you know, they're like, you're not listening, you know. It's too late now.
So how do parents regain hope then?
Like, for me, my parent, right, my mom.
Yeah.
Like, I've never had a relationship with my mom, right? My mom, she lives in UK, and she left when I was like 10 years old, right? So then when she was in UK, she would call every day, you know. She would always talk to me on the phone, you know. But I didn't like her when I was younger because she was just, like, very strict. You know, and then once I got older, I didn't have, like, nobody to talk to because my grandparents, they were not listening, right? So I would call my mom and I would ask her all these questions, and I'd be like, you know, why is this happening? You know, why? And then she would give me answers. You know, she would, like, give me that. You know, she would be like, this is just how they raised, you know, or she would, like motivate me, peep game, mm-hmm. like make me more wise. And then I would like, that helped me out a lot to have somebody to talk to, because I couldn't talk to my grandparents because they were not understanding me. But my mom, you know, like those are her parents, so she understood a lot of things. They, you know, and then she made me like get the difference, like why they're acting that way. And so she just kind of like helped me understand why my grandparents were that way, you know. Wow. And that gave me a lot of like made me feel good, because my mom, I could talk to her about anything, and she would be like, "Yo, if I do something wrong, or if I say something wrong, I'm just gonna advise you. You know, if you like don't listen to me, like you're your own man at the end of the day. But I would advise you to do this, that. If I say something, correct me if I say something wrong, you know, so then I could like act different, you know." So she would like she gave me what I wanted, you know, like she gave me what I wanted the whole time.
Oh, so she showed that she cared.
Yeah, like she told me she cared, you know, like even when I was like ignoring her calls, she never quit. She would always call me. And then like once I got older, I was like, "Yo, she actually cares." So I would call her, and she would like just help me throughout everything.
And then, Henny, how were you able to help your parents, like, regain, what do you call?
Attention?
Yes.
Okay, so basically, around the time that I was struggling with a lot of my mental health issues, I had a really bad thyroid condition that I was getting treated for. So it all sort of kind of collaborated together. My thyroid was making my health worse, my mental health worse. So my parents, initially, their whole thing is, "Oh, she's going to get the thyroid removed. Everything's going to be better." So I got the thyroid removed. I go into the treatment, the radiation, all that stuff. Nothing. My body is shutting down, but my mind is still going crazy. They weren't sort of listening to me, I guess. And so that's kind of where I was not getting along with my family. And then it was like one time they had just seen like a relapse, and all of a sudden they see behaviors that are out there, and then they paid attention to me. And they were able to kind of assess that, yeah, you know what? It's not just this thyroid. We need to be able to examine all of her. And so I think one of the most vivid memories that I have, at least, is I remember one time I was really struggling with a really bad depressive episode. Couldn't get out of my bed for 6 days. I just laid there. And my mom had come in like 2 days in, and they kind of noticed something was off. I would go to work, come back, go to bed. Go to work, come back, go to bed. Like, I didn't even do anything at work. I just kind of sat there. And it felt like everybody was moving around me too fast, but I couldn't keep up. It's kind of like a train. When you're passing a train, you're trying to get into the train. You're trying to like get into the railway, but the railway just keeps moving forward and stuff like that. Was just how I was feeling. Wow. Everything was just moving fast, and I just couldn't keep up. And I kind of just shut down at that point. But my mom had come into the room, and she just was like, "You need to go take a shower." I was like,
"Wake up."
Because I obviously, she went to, "You need to go take a shower. You need to get on your meds, back on your medications right away." They're able to sit down with me and be like, "We just need to know like what to look out for." And that was like, really, for me, that was a touching moment, because I'm just like, before then, we never had conversations. I was so scared of just being able to talk to you about all that information that it made me feel unwanted. That when now that you're able to accept that and able to understand like what I go through with my mental health and just kind of look out for my behavior, it just makes me feel like you care, and that you're able to access this and appreciate me as an individual. And my parents have never looked at me any differently. And I think that was what I really needed for me to understand and accept. Like, I can come to you and forward to you and talk to you about anything, and you won't look at me less. And I felt like those conversations that they have with me and that support that I needed was really, real helpful for me, at least. And I want that support, and I want that kind of attention for other Somali to be able to have that dialogue with their parents, and to be able to get that support from them. And then maybe through that conversation, through that open dialogue that they're able to have, they won't have to resort to drugs and alcohol as a form of their coping mechanisms.
Mm-hmm. And I think like in our community, we've been talking about how mental health is an issue. And that's like a reoccurring topic, like, "Oh, it's an issue. We don't talk about it more often. But now that it's brought up, I feel like we really don't even do anything. Like, we haven't really done anything to help it out. You know, we talk about it. Okay. We've acknowledged that it's an issue, but I feel like we haven't really done much about it, you know? And I feel like, in my community at least.
Yeah.
And I feel like our parents don't really know that much. And I feel like it's an obligation for us now that we are adults to kind of educate our parents. And on top of that, like, educate like the parents that are just becoming parents, you know, like the people that are a generation above us. So whether it's like doing workshops at our masjids or whatever it is, but I feel like we need to put more effort into it. So our parents could, you know, be more open to it, and could actually see the signs and stuff like that before it's too late, you know?
I think what's really cool about when back when we had the radio shows, we did bring out a psychiatrist who came and talked to
Dr. Ahmed.
Dr. Ahmed, shout out to him. And he talked in Somali, which was great because I didn't know what I was saying. So, and he talked in Somali and was able to kind of bring up an open dialogue. So we had so many callers and people were telling us about their scenarios. They're like, what do we do about this? And what do we do about that? And my brother is struggling with this and my son's going through this. And I think that that conversation was a start and the push that we needed, but it's not there yet because I don't know if they're fully able to grasp that and go to, you know, see him as a psychiatrist who's has an open practice, who talks a lot, who, you know, diagnoses people and is able to talk to clients and patients. And I think that that was a really cool platform that we'd used, because that was the first time I'd actually seen people call and say, hey, my son's going through this. This is a bit, I don't know if this has anything to do with his mental health, and him having to talk to them and have that conversation with them was really rewarding, in my opinion.
That's awesome.
But yeah, most people, they don't even know they have like mental issues, you know?
Yeah.
Like they just, because they're so used to like our culture. Even me, for like, I went through like mental issues too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know I was going through mental issues. You know, I just assumed that that's what, it's normal. It's just, you know, that's just how life is.
Yeah.
You know?
Everybody goes through ups and downs in life, but we need to be able to assess if ups and downs in life is just like a regular thing, or are there underlying issues that we need to, do you really need help? Like, do you need support? If you're struggling to get out of bed, or if you can't keep up, or if you're shaking too much because your mind's going 100 miles an hour, like, you need to be able to say, hey, maybe I need to go to a psychiatrist and talk this out, or even talk to a friend or anybody who can kind of understand you. But the open communication and dialogue is definitely what's needed to kind of assess if, you know, all of the issues that are going on.
Yeah. How has like faith played a role in your life when it comes to mental health?
Oh, so when I was going through my depression phase, I had nobody to like help me with it as far as like family goes, because they don't understand what depression is, or they would think like I'm going crazy, or like, you know, they would add on to it actually by saying like messed up stuff, you know, because I'd be down and just be like locked in myself in my room, and they'd just be like coming in like, what's wrong with you? Are you crazy? Like, well, why don't I, you know, like, why are you being like this? And I'm trying to tell them, like, I can't explain it to them because they don't understand, you know? So then I started like looking for ways to like cope with it, right? So first I was like putting myself in bad environments where there was, you know, I was like using drugs, right? To like cope with the depression I was going through. Cause at least when you're like doing drugs, like you feel like you don't feel, you're numbing yourself, you know? You don't feel those feelings anymore. And like, and at first it becomes like, just, it is a good feeling. Right. But after a while that adds on to it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So then once I like started like learning more about my faith, I came across this book called Don't Be Sad. Right. It's written by this guy named Dr. Ayn Al-Qarni.
Mm-hmm.
And so that book was just basically tells you, like, asks you a lot of like questions, you know, like just, how to, it's like, it mentally built me to be stronger, because it would like tell me about situations, you know, like about hardship, about like depression, how to overcome it, like at least through faith, you know. So it would tell you like why, like the mercy of God, and like how, like, you know, God is like most merciful, you know. I was like, at first, you know, like you don't have a relationship with God, so you don't see his mercy, right? So then you're like questioning, like, why me, you know, why am I going through this such a hard life? And this book would just like ask you, like, you know, has the same questions I had, and then it would give me the answers, you know. It'd be like, you know, God, and it puts you in scenarios, it tell you stories about like other people, like, you know, like most people that are successful, like, or what is Oprah Winfrey, or like other people that like are like that have like good lifestyles now. Like they had some hardships growing up too, you know. Like, you're not the only one that goes through these things. Everybody goes through hardships, you know. Like, God would not give you like hardships that you can't overcome, you know. Like, if the harder your test is, like,
can I snap? Like, snap, yeah. snap.
No. I'm serious though. Like that's just good. Knowing that matter, that like God would not put you through a hardship that you can't overcome. It was like, yo, it made me like, yo, I could overcome this, you know. It was like, it's not that hard.
Gave you strength.
Yeah, it gave me strength. And then I started looking into it more and more and more and more. Like, the more, like, I started taking steps towards God, he would just give me all the answers. Like, I would just find all the answers, right? But most of us are like, so, like, numb that we're afraid to challenge ourselves and, like, change, you know? Like, we're so, like, we already lose hope.
What was that book called?
Don't Be Sad. It's a really amazing book. Well, I'm not gonna lie. I recommend anybody going through like depression or anything. They should definitely look into that book. It gives you like life through an Islamic perspective, you know. But it's not just like a religious book. It's like Quran on it and stuff like that. But it tells you like other stories, you know, people like other scenarios and where you can relate to, or like where you see people have it worse than you, you know. Like, you're not the only one that's going through stuff. There's at least, like, you have, like, a home to come to. You have food at the end of the day. There's people, like, you know, in Africa that are, like, starving. There's people, like that have no homes. You know, there's homeless people. There's people that's worse than you, you know? So it's, like, there's people that would, like, pray for your situation, you know, instead of where they're at, right? So it's, like, it just gave me the understanding that, yo, there's more to life, you know? There's like, you know, that helped me overcome it, at least, you know?
Oh, that was beautiful.
Yeah.
So, Abdu'l-Bari, then how did your discovery to faith start? Dino's way was through depression and his mental health. And then, so what was your journey through finding faith?
I think I'm still going on my journey, you know. Like I said, I grew up in a religious household, so that was just something that was always part of me. And then once I went off to college and I was kind of on my own, those things just kind of stuck with me. And there's been times where I'm like really lacking, you know, and there's times like where I'm really on my deen, and there's been times like, okay, where I start praying 5 times a day and I don't miss a prayer. And those are the times where I'm like so peaceful with myself, to the point where I'm just like, okay, I'm ready to go. If I die right now, I'm good, you know?
Yeah.
And then there's times where I'm lacking and I'm just not ready for death. You know, death is like a scary topic. And to be honest, like, I feel like when I start messing up and I kind of go away from the deen, I just continue like to do bad things. You know what I mean? I think we had a discussion off the air when we were talking about what does being religious mean, right? Or what's too religious or something like that.
Yeah.
And like whenever somebody that was praying 5 times a day, when somebody that was doing stuff that I wasn't doing would come around me, I would just kind of want to be away from that person. Because that kind of reminded me of the stuff that I should be doing, and I kind of felt guilty. So then I would just go down that road of, okay, I'm not praying right now. I'm just going to continue not to do it. And I just don't want to be around it because it's just reminding me of, you know, what I should be doing or stuff like that. Yeah. But then once I am on the track and I'm like praying 5 times a day, I feel like other aspects of my life are even looking better, and to the point where I said, I feel like if I go today, I'm good, you know? So yeah, I'm still on that journey, you know, like it's something that I struggle with day to day, and I'm working on it day to day. You know, I feel like it's a lifelong journey. So
Even me, for me, I'm still not perfect. Like my faith, you know, like, what I learned so far is that I know like how to like always go back to the main source, you know. So like, whenever I'm having bad days or whenever I'm like going through certain situations, because life will always like test you with different things, right? Once you think you passed this test or you overcame this hurdle, like there's another obstacle anywhere, you know. There's like, whether it's family, whether it's like school, whether it's friends, there's like friendship, there's like harshness from every angle, you know. And you're always gonna go through a different hardship, right? So just the fact that like I'm more prepared than I was when I was younger, right? But like, I don't know what tomorrow's going to bring, you know. I'm not perfect, you know, and people like have to understand that it's not going to be easy. Like life is not easy. Life is hard, but it's like, you could maintain it. You could be content with like what you're going through, knowing that, you know, like, alhamdulillah, you know, that we're Muslim, you know, we're like, God is always on our side, you know, like there's always try to increase your faith, you know. Always learn more, because what you know today might save you tomorrow, you know. Like, you would do something, but I'll be like super religious one time, and I would have phases. Like, that's how my life has been through. Like, I would be going like through phases, right? So at first, like, you learn something that you didn't know before, and then like you follow it, and then like you crash, you know, because you know, it's hard, you know, it's not easy. You keep going back and forth, but like, and every time you get, you know, you like, it helps.
You gotta keep trying. Yeah,
you can't just quit, you know.
Yeah.
You can't just be bad all the way, and you can't just be good all, like, just be perfect. You're not gonna be perfect.
So my question would be, what's an underlying challenge that you believe no one brings up in this self-discovery to face? Like, what's a challenge you didn't expect to be a challenge for you?
Oh, family, you know, because family is like, you think it's like, that's your protection, you know. Family is something that it should be like, that you should let your guard down, right? Family, like, is supposed to be a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes, like, the family could be the number one test for you, like, that make you go through a lot of things. And me, once I, like, found I was hurt the most through my family, you know. So whether it's friends, like, you could, your friendship, you could fix it, you know. But family is like something you come to every day. Your house, right? You know, you go back to the house every day. If that, like, there's problems in that environment, it hurts you a lot, you know. And like most people, they don't expect it, but you know, it's there. It's family is like the number one test.
So how did you overcome that challenge then with your family?
My family, through you know, just, I don't know what I, it's still not, I'm still trying to fix it. You know, yeah. It's still not perfect, but it's better than before, you know, because now I'm like understanding where they're coming from, you know, like by like me, like just being more mature, you know, being more like aware of what they're going through, because they're just doing this because, you know, that's how they were raised, you know, that's what their definition of what a family is.
Mm. And then Abdubari, what were you? He's still on his journey.
I'm still on my journey. I haven't really, like, the challenges that I've seen are like, it's nothing out of the ordinary, you know, so I don't really have an answer for that. I'm sorry.
It's all
right. I mean, yeah, there's no right answer, though. You know, I don't
think. Okay, right, Dino, a question for you, though. Do you feel like when your family noticed the journey that you're going, like the progression that you were going on with like your religion and stuff, like, did you feel like that kind of helped them fix the relationship that you guys had? Like when they seen you become more religious?
I mean, that's what I would expect, you know, like when I was like becoming close to a deen, I would expect them to be happy, you know, like I want them to like support me on that, right? But it would be like the opposite, you know, because they're not there, you know, they're not religious themselves. So it was like, for me, it was like, it was hard, like saying like, I expected them to be happy, you know?
Do you think it has to do with the fact that Abdubari said that when he was on, like when he noticed himself lacking in his faith, he wouldn't want to be around people who are on it because it reminds him of what he was going through. Do you think that your journey in a way kind of reminded your family of like what was missing on their journey with the religion? So do you think you kind of became a little reminder of it?
Not really. I try to be like, for example, yeah, like, so if you try to be like, on the deen, right? Try to be like, at least
deen is religion, by the way.
Yeah, if you try to be like more faithful, you know. If you try to be more faithful, right?
Yeah.
So if your environment is not faithful, like if your friends are not being like religious or at least like going through the same journey you are, mm-hmm. like you're gonna be very lonely, you know. Like even though you're doing like you're finding these answers and you're going through this this journey of yours, it's a very lonely journey, you know. You're gonna be by yourself most of the time. So family is like, there's no comfort there, right? But if you have more people around you, like more people taking the same journey as you, it would be way easier, you know? Because once I found like right now, I have like more bigger group, you know? Like, I'm not alone, you know? I have like a bunch of friends that we pray together, we go to masajid together, you know? We learn together. So it's like, now it's better and it's easier. But before it's like, you're doing it by yourself. So everybody thinks you're like a stranger. Like you're weird because you're not doing the same thing they're doing, you know? So the more people you have around you that are like taking this journey together, the easier it gets, you know.
And to be consciously aware of if somebody else is on their faith, like their journey, just because you're not on it, I think it's important to try to understand where they're coming
from. Yeah, don't shut them out. If you see your friend like changing for the better, you should encourage them to like, you know, keep pushing at it. You know, don't make them feel bad, you know, by saying jokes around, you know, like they should be like comfortable around you, you know. It should make you want to be better. It shouldn't be like make you not.
I guess it depends on where the person is at in their life.
Also. Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, everybody else. Yeah, you know. But like, you have to put yourself in a good environment. So if you don't have friends that are trying to change or want to be better, then, you know, God will give you better friends, you know.
I think what you reminded me of, even though you were alone in this journey, and later on you found your people. And regardless if you're lonely in life, you're always going to find your group later on.
Yeah, you're always going to find who your friends are. You're always going to have like even friendship with that, right? Friendship always going to change like what friendship is. Mm-hmm. Like, so you, when you're younger, you know, friendship is just like people you hang out with, who you play sports with, you know, the people around you, right? But as you get older, you know, you're going to like certain things, you know, like you're going to be going to different spots, right? Mm-hmm. And depending on where you go, you're going to have certain friends, you know, and like some of your like friends that you had when you were younger, you're going to outgrow each other, you know, you're going to outgrow each other. Because there's some people in my life when we were younger, that were my best friends, right? Mm-hmm. But now that we're older, like we're like strangers to each other, you know, we don't talk, you know, it's hi there, but it's like there's no friendship. They don't know me, you know, a lot of people like they don't know me and I don't know them, you know.
Yeah, it's part of the journey.
So, Abdubari, I guess I'm wondering, like, how has faith led to the best version of you? I know you struggle a lot with faith, and you say yourself that it is a work in progress. But now, as a grown man, I guess I'm wondering now, mm-hmm. like, how has that led to the best version of you? What do you think that?
Or is it still leading to the best? Or is it
still leading?
Yeah, I mean, like I said before, I'm still on my journey, but I feel like it's helped me kind of figure out who I want to become, you know, like what kind of person I want to become, what kind of man that I should be. And so yeah, it kind of helped me just realize what kind of man I want to become. And it's helped me kind of like pick what kind of friends I should be around. Cause when I was younger, I just used to be friends with anybody, you know, like growing up in a small town, literally everybody knows everybody. Mm-hmm. So everybody is friends with everybody. And as I got older, I just kind of surrounded myself with like-minded people. And that really helped me become the best person in regards to like my faith, you know, because if you're around people that are not doing what you want to be doing, then you're going to start doing what they're doing. And that's not part of your goal. So that really helped me just kind of build my friendship with certain people that I hang out with now, you know, and that's just brought me closer to the deen or the faith, I guess you could say. But yeah, I'm still going on that journey and it's a work in progress.
So do you think faith essentially leads to fullness? So you talk.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, personally, like whenever I was really religious, I was praying 5 times a day and I was doing everything the way I should be. Like I felt really, you know, full, I guess you could say, or I felt the best version of myself to the point where I was like, if death comes, I'm good to go.
I'm ready.
Yeah. And I only mentioned that because I'll tell you guys a story. So like I said, my dad is a pretty religious guy. And to the point where like, I would say like for the past 10 years, like, okay, like about 15 years ago, he went to the Hajj, right? Mm-hmm. And he went around, he called his kids, he called his family members, and he was telling them, hey guys, I'm going to Hajj, you know, if I don't come back, you know, I'm just saying bye to you guys. And he gave like a big emotional speech because, you know, sometimes people go to Hajj and something happens where they fall and then they die. We've heard those stories before, right?
So the horror stories of the Hajj.
So he, and on top of that, on top of that, my dad,
that's a blessing.
So his dad, he died at Hajj, you know? So like he went to Hajj and then the story is like he basically finished prayer and right after that, that's how he passed away. So that's something that's always been in my dad's, you know? Yeah. So first time he went, he gave this big emotional speech, like if I don't come back, blah, blah, blah. So he was ready to go. So here he is, he comes back, you know, he's still around, right? Right. And then the second time he goes, same thing. My dad's an emotional person too, so he like cries when he talks about certain things. Oh. So he's calling his kids, hey, if I don't come back, make sure you're good to each other, blah, blah, blah. He's crying. A month later, he's back. he's still around, you know? So I only say that because he talks about it a lot to the point where he mentions it like, I'm ready to go, you know what I mean? So I want to get to the point in my life where I'm so good within my faith and secure within my faith that if something happens, I'm not scared of death, you know?
Okay, fellas. So what are essentially 3 tips that you would give to people who are on this journey or essentially want to be on this journey?
Okay, so I think everybody should like have a journey where they have or have a relationship with God, you know, like in any aspect, like at least have a relationship with God. Because some people, they don't have a relationship with God whatsoever, you know, and they're wondering why they're going through these things like depression or like why they're doing what they're doing, right? But if you have no relationship with God, it's like then you're never going to find your, you know, like that peace of mind, you know, and that peace of mind comes from having a relationship with God because God makes it easier. God like sends blessings on your life, you know, and you understand what God is, you're being tested, you understand your tests, right? So I would say like, just research, like one first thing I'll do is just learn as much as you can about God, about depression, about whatever, like just do research on whatever you're going through, you know, and how to overcome it, you know, and if you don't have no relationship with God, do research on building that relationship, you know, like learn about your faith, learn about your deen, learn about like certain things that questions you have, try to look for the answers. You know, like if you have all these questions, and that's why maybe you're away from God. You know, but if you find those answers and look for those answers, you'll be better off than not knowing what you're doing wrong or right. You know, and try to implement what you learn. You know, it's like whatever say you're doing something wrong, and you find out that yo, this is wrong. Don't keep doing it. You know, try to like eventually over time like find a way to like overcome that and try to follow. You know, what you learned, you know, and whatever you learned that was helpful, try to like reach out to other people, like, you know, that if you could like understand, you know, like where they're coming from, you could relate to them, try to like give them, you know, like what you learned, you know, like give back to what you learned.
So share your information.
Yeah, share your knowledge, you know, because there's this tradition where the prophet says, you know, I always, when I was younger, I always just think like to tell somebody or become like a preach to somebody, you have to be like knowledgeable, like be like a sheikh, you know. Mm-hmm. But that's not what the prophet says. The prophet says, the prophet, he says, share from me, like convey from me, even if you know one ayat, you know.
So like, anyone could give doubt.
Yeah, so like even like one thing, you know, you could like share that. So that one thing could help somebody, you know. Mm-hmm. Like so is, you know, you have to like keep the tradition going, I guess.
And Damari?
So I think I would just tell the person that they have to make like a conscious decision that they do want to change. You know, they have to know within themselves that they want to make a change, and they have to like cut all the bad habits that they're doing. And then after that, you have to like set a goal, you know, like you have to tell yourself like, OK, I want to accomplish this. And for me to accomplish this, I'm going to have to do this in this type of steps, you know. And I think the most important thing in that journey is basically surrounding yourself with people that will support you and have like similar goals or like-minded people, you know, like so having friends. They say like you are who your friends are. And I believe that to the core. Like if you have friends that are praying 5 times a day and are going to the masjid and are trying to quit these bad habits that you have as well, that's really going to help you in your journey to becoming more religious, you could say. So I think those three tips is what I would tell anybody.
All right. And that concludes this episode of Pal Talk, Real Talk.
Yeah. Thank you guys for coming on the show. Where can people reach you if they want to talk to you?
Oh, snap. Getting a plug in.
Yeah.
So you can find me on Instagram at Bari2Eyes23. I guess my profile picture is me as a kid with my dad, which is weird, but yeah, that's where you can find me.
All right, Dino, where can they find you?
Instagram is The Chronicles of Dino.
The Chronicles of Dino?
Yeah.
And we'll link both of their the show notes.
Yeah, of course, people to find you. Yeah, we'll get your social media info and put it on the show notes. You can also reach us at paltalkrealtalk@gmail.com or on Instagram.
Follow.
At paltalkrealtalk on Instagram. And that concludes our episode of the show. Take care of yourself, be good to your mental health, and do something good. Thanks.